So here's what happened as a proud member of the But Why Though podcast community. Hey guys, welcome to another episode of So Here's What Happened. I'm your host, Nisha, and I'm always joined by
Carolyn.
Yeah, we back. It's been June.
Hey. Can't believe it.
I know. Like, summer's almost over, and I'm not okay with that.
Like, me either, to be honest.
I'm not, and especially since it took forever for it to actually get hot here, and now it is 95 degrees outside.
It was the same thing here. Like, our winter lasted really long. Heck, there's still some days that are, like, cold-ish. Mm. Like, let me see. So today's Monday that we're recording, which is July the 1st. Like, Wednesday was cold. Like, I had on jacket. I'm like, what the heck? Why am I walking around in a jacket at the end of June?
See, and again, for us, and I'm in Chicagoland, it was literally, we barely got to 65 2 weeks ago. So once again, global warming isn't a thing, remember?
Mm-mm,
it's not real.
It's real.
Shoot. It's real. And I'm starting to get scared. I feel like the sun was getting closer and closer today. Like, we're going to die.
Listen, if you read the Bible, you know what it says in Revelation.
And me being a preacher's kid, I just be like, Lord.
I know. It's been me to talk all these white people talking about they don't bathe their skin and they got the plagues and all. I'm like, you people trying to usher in the end times. I'm like, I am not ready. I am not prepared. Like, no, I am not ready for all the plagues and stuff. Lord Jesus, no.
Yeah.
No, girl.
I can't. But on a lighter note, let's get into what did we read for the month of June?
I read, well, I'm already going to do a recap of these, but for the month of June for reading, I read a book by Rebecca Witherspoon. And that one is called Sugar Baby. Let me look it up to make sure. And I started reading the Ray comics. Now, anyone who knows me and sees me talk about action films on Twitter, and I'm sure I've mentioned it on here a couple of times. Like the Ray, it's not a trilogy because it's only two films so far, but like they're one of my favorite action films, and there's a comic based on it. And then I'm like, what? So I legit bought it today, and I started reading it. And I haven't really gotten into the story yet, but the art style is really unique because of the colors that they use. Because if you watch the film, you know, like it's not like one of those films that utilizes like strobe lights or what I should say, like saturated colors. Like a lot of it is very regular lighting and regular coloring, except for a few fight scenes where that takes place in like a club and stuff. But the artwork in the comic is really well done, and I like the colors, and like it's like very moody and like very almost, I want to say noir, but it's like very interesting. A lot of it is in like silhouettes. You like see like the figures, they're black and they're silhouette, but there's like outlines in like different colors in like green or teal or pink or red or white. So I think that's very interesting. So I'm very happy to get into it and see like that, how they actually do the action scenes in the comic, because it's actually based on the film. Like, there's a couple characters that are missing, like the one by Yayan is, from what I'm seeing in the preview of the comic, isn't in the comic itself, and I love that character, but he's not in it. So I'm going to see how they switch up some of the characters and the storyline.
Interesting. And you broke up a little bit on my end. Can you say what is it called again? The title?
It's The Raid. So it's the first issue, and you can find it, I think it's Comixology. Like, I got it through Amazon.
Oh yeah. No, that's perfect, because I use Comixology whenever I want to read like DC comics.
Yeah, so like I downloaded the app and I got the first. So this is the first comic that I'm reading through this app, and it's the first issue that I'm reading. So I think there's a couple of issues out already. Nice. But you can find out Comixology and can find it through Amazon, because that's how I got it. And it's for like $2.99.
Ooh, that's decent. And then you don't have to, and you ain't got to go and get up and go to this comic book store. So that sounds like a good idea for me to start reading.
Yeah. So yeah, I'd have a full review, but those are the two most recent books that I've read.
Nice. But I'm really interested into like reading more of The Raid, because like I just Googled it and looked up some of the art, like so I can see the cover for reference. This looks dope.
It looks really good, right? It was like, they made my favorite film into a comic. Like, yes.
Like, it's very good. Like, I'm really impressed. It's not that I don't like normally see like really good comic art, but it's like from, like you said, it was originally the film and then making it into a comic.
Mm-hmm.
That's like,
which that doesn't happen very often, does it? Because usually it's the other way around. You get the comics and then you have the property.
I feel like in today's time, yeah. I feel like that's not that common now. I mean, like maybe, I feel like, no, you're right. Like, I feel like where we're at today, it's typically the comic or the story becomes the film. But like for someone to be like, let's continue the story. Because I guess the only other thing I can think of is when they did that with Angel, with the David Boreanaz, the Buffy the Vampire.
David Boreanaz. Yeah.
Yeah, Boreanaz, his series, when they ended the TV series, but then they decided to continue the story in the comic.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. Yeah.
So, I never read it.
Yeah. All right. So I'm looking at it. So the artist for the comics is Budi Setiawan. So the last name is Setiawan. So, but I love the artwork that he did for it. It's very, I don't even know, I'm not sure what style you would call it, but I wouldn't call it noir, but I also
would call it that. I think that,
call it noir?
Yeah. Because it's like this gritty, I would call it noir. Like, it's got this gritty, kind of dark, but like the way he plays with the colors.
Yeah, right. It's the way how the colors are mixed and how he uses the colors and stuff. So there's four issues out so far. So the first issue came out on the 19th of October of last year.
Mm.
So, and the second and the fourth issue. So it looks like the first three issues came out on the same day of last year. So that's the 19th of October. And then the fourth issue came out on the 24th of February. I could be wrong, but that's based on the website that I'm looking at now. But yeah, so like if you like martial arts films, if you like martial arts in general, I would recommend this. Based on what I've read so far in the comic, I would recommend it. And for the art style and like other set, because I love anything related to the rage. So yeah.
Perfect. Now, it just kind of like gets me in the mood to go watch the movie now. Like,
yeah, it looks really good.
Awesome. Well, thank you for sharing those with us. I'm definitely going to add The Raid to my comics list, even though I need to, like, actually, I'm just going to prioritize it to the next things I read, because four issues, I can definitely start reading and get into it easily.
Yeah, and, like, it's based on, I paid $2.99, and I think that's $2.99 US, so it probably came up to $4 or $5 around, which isn't bad. For, I believe it's 30 pages. I paid, Okay. Yeah, I think the most I paid for comic, because let me see, when I paid for the Ronin one, it came to about five, around the same amount. Yeah, so, and I got, but I'm reading the digital one. I'm not reading like a print copy, I'm reading digital, because sometimes I find sometimes they don't ship to Canada, which I think is weird. But I got this one digitally because I can read it on my phone anytime, so.
Perfect. That sounds good. Well, as for me, I have been getting back into writing and have been for But Why Though. So I recently wrote a review for one of my favorite mangas of all time. It's called Berserk. Well, Berserk has been, so like, just to give y'all some background information on the manga itself. So it premiered in 1989. That thing came out before I was born. Like 2 years before I was born, it came out. So this manga has been, and it is still ongoing to this day. It is the most long, like, I want to make sure I say this, like, it is known as one of the most long running and popular adult manga series ever published. Yeah, so it's been like, it has continuously been going on. Like, it's not that it's like religiously been coming out in the same time and everything. It's more so that the writer has had to, the creator has had to take breaks. He's had to go on hiatus every now and then, because like, it's a massive story, and like manga takes a lot out of the creators when they like have so many deadlines and stuff, especially when you have a popular piece. Berserk was created by Kentaro Miura, and I would say it's a lot. Like, and I'm going to just give y'all some trigger warnings. So first off, Berserk and the volume, I read volume 2, the deluxe edition that Dark Horse is re-releasing in honor of its anniversary. So again, trigger warnings for this material is that it includes sexual assault, and child abuse. Mm. So again, it is a very adult like manga. I do not recommend it for children at all. But yeah, so that's a little background on that. But so I'm just going to give a brief synopsis. It's set in a fictional medieval dark fantasy world. Berserk centers on Guts, a lone wandering mercenary hunted by real demons and feared by many who know him as the Black Swordsman. Described as having a mysterious and dark history, he lives by a code of survival, revenge, and not having empathy for those he deems as weak. So he's your basic archetype for an antihero. And right. His name is Guts. So the thing, and I'm just gonna, what I will say about the deluxe edition is like, what I really like about it is it is three volumes. It is three regular volumes in one volume. So they've really packed all the, like the story is really packed in, but it is a massive read. Like I finished it in 1 week, but it that's like me reading it nonstop. So
yeah, that's
nearly, cool. Nearly broke my brain.
Oh my gosh.
Because
you know what that sounds like? That sounds like the Expanse series. Like the Expanse series, mm-hmm. I got up to book 7, mm-hmm. and there's 8 books now, and each book is super thick. Like each mm-hmm. book is like well over 1,000 pages. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of content, it's a lot of stories, a lot of characters, and like to keep track of all that. Now to imagine a manga that's going off from 1987, you said? Good grief. Good grief. 1989, sorry. Good grief. Good Lord.
I know. And it's like, the thing about, one of my favorite things about the manga is that the man, like he is the writer and the artist. So reading the volume really makes you appreciate like how you see the slow progression of his art. Like, and it's not saying that his art was bad in the beginning. It's just like his art style is very intricate. Like when he draws at somebody's armor, they have like all this interlocking, like different patterns, and like each character and like all these main characters' armor, they're all unique. So then having to draw that over and over and over again, and then inking it, and then and then the fight scenes, it's just like there's just so much to draw and like so many characters. I think about like, oh dear God, no wonder this man needs rest. So I pray he stays in good health, because I want to know how this ends. But also, like, this man has created like one of the longest running, like most beautiful pieces of manga, in my opinion. Mm. And then so like to just go back to like the trigger warnings I mentioned, I do want to like talk about a little bit, because I wrote it out in my review when it comes to sexual assault and everything. I want to make sure I say this as like, this is not a piece that does it for like torture porn. This is not, it's not done in a way for shock value. And that's something I appreciate about this manga a lot, is because it's not putting in sexual assault as a plot device so much as it is like, it's really talking about the complexities of sexual assault and how does that impact its victims moving forward. And I think that's something important, because like, let's talk, like comparing it to like Game of Thrones, it's like, there's the line in like the last season with Sansa, and she's like, I appreciate the men who attacked me.
Or who not a stupidness.
That was just like, this is what, like, this is what bad, right? This is what bad character development looks like. When you think, and it's not to say that a woman can't derive like strength from her sexual assault, but I would be damned if a woman would actually think.
That's the thing, right?
They just missed the mark so badly.
Yeah, it's one thing to say that they recognize how that a woman that's been assaulted recognizes her strength after mm-hmm. it, and recognizes how strong she is to get through it, and to, you know, and to like rebuild herself and like to work through emotional stuff. There's one thing to say, I found my inner strength through following this process. But it's mm-hmm. another thing to actually thank the abuser. Like, that's BS. Like, that's how, you know, two ignorant white men wrote this. Mm-hmm. Or I should just say two ignorant men, period, because men ignorant men come in all races. But you can tell two fundamentally ignorant men who clearly don't speak to the women in their lives wrote that nonsense. Trash. Burn it.
Very trash. Very trash. And I say this, so in my example, and I dive into it a little bit in the review, Guts, the main character, so he's really... drawn in like super tough, dark, gritty, like main character. But then you learn in this volume that he was raped when he was 11 years old. And what's worse is that his adopted father knew about it and did nothing to help him. His adopted father literally, like, basically sold his body to a man in his mercenary group. And at this time, at 11, he was also in the mercenary group fighting. So it's like, he's had a hard life. I don't want to go too much. I want people to kind of like read this because it is really, really good. But I also understand it is gritty and there is a lot. So if it's not your flavor, I get it. But like I don't want to give everything away about it because there's a lot to dissect from this entire manga. And I have like maybe, and like the whole like next few chapters are about him exacting his revenge. Like he's an 11-year-old child. He finds a way to kill his rapist. And then like later his adopted father goes crazy and he has in self-defense has to kill his adopted father. Now you see on his face as he's illustrated, he gets a sigh of relief from like, not from killing his father, from killing his father. He feels like this deep sadness because he always wanted his adopted father to love him and he wanted his respect. But when he killed the rapist, you see like him get this like relief, like he feels at ease. But then as he's gotten older, you see that he has night terrors about it still as he like grows up. Because he hasn't been able to process it. And he's like, he's trying to get to the point where he can process it. And I think it's important that a character, like you see this super strong masculine character having to, and throughout the series later on, you see like throughout this chapter, you see him start to like open up and become like closer to people and trust people. Because that was one of the reasons he didn't trust people for the longest time. Because he thought, I can't be weak. I can't trust anybody because they'll betray me and they'll hurt me. Right. Like, I'm paraphrasing, but like once he joins like another mercenary group and he slowly like these walls come down. It's not like his standoffish, like tough guy demeanor doesn't like completely go away. It's more like he has a better understanding of what is a comrade and like what are the people that he respects around him and how they respect him. And I think it's just it doesn't get resolved completely in this one volume, like his trauma. But I appreciate that the author takes the time to understand how complex trauma is for a sexual assault survivor. Like it's not something he was going to wipe away after killing his rapist. It's something that it's going to take time. And I appreciate that we're going through it with guts. And it's not something like, it's not a lewd or, you know, gross, like kind of like show of it or anything. Like when he has these night terrors, it's like literally he feels like he's that little boy again. And he blames himself for not being strong enough. And it shows a lot of how it's impacted his life. But it's great to see like how he's growing as a character.
Well, that's important, especially from a male perspective, right? Because sometimes in like film or TV shows or even books, if they do discuss like sexual assault or rape for male victims, like they kind of like gloss it over and they try to use like their macho-ness as a shield, which is a defensive mechanism that can occur. But the thing is they don't discuss they don't show them actually processing or trying to process or trying to like come to terms with it or trying to, you know, like, just showing that the effects these things can have. Like you might see like someone being like extremely macho for being macho sake, and then you find out, okay, like they were assaulted, but then you don't see anyone giving them any real kind of sympathy, right? And so I guess it's important, like, for a male writer to, if they're going to show that, to be as you said, as thoughtful and as and handle it in a mature way, right? So I think that's important. Yeah,
and I think it's because it's like it's really nice to see that they are unpacking the complexities of the trauma and the effects it's had on him. But then like, it's nice to see him grow as a character too, because it's not something it's something he's holding on to him and he doesn't realize he's holding on to him. He's just like, he shoved it down and he's just like, I'm not that weak little kid anymore. I'm this mercenary. I'm no one can harm me. But then you see like how that attack shaped his life a little bit because he hates when people touch him. Like, he, like, multiple times throughout this volume, you see that, like, if you even lightly pat him, he's like, what the hell are you doing? No one touch me. Like, right. Even if it's like a congratulatory pat, someone reaches to shake his hand, he hates human touch. He hate, like, it, in one chapter, he says, like, I hate the feeling of someone else touching me. And it's like, wow, you see, like, you don't get to, like, see that with male characters a lot. Mm. I mean, like you said, because they try to deal with them in a way where it's like, oh, it's over once I get my revenge. I'm like, no, it's not over once you get your revenge. And I'm like, I'm not saying that that can't be the case for, like, you know, some people. I'm not saying go at an act of revenge. I'm going down a rabbit hole. My point is, when it comes to characters, I think it's important that we actually see them go through the process. And it's not something that's for, like, you know, shock value instead. Yeah. Because I feel like sexual assault is a very difficult thing to use, and like not use, but to convey in media, especially entertainment media, because it can go very badly very quickly.
Yes, it can.
Yeah, just like, again, Game of Thrones. Mm. A lot of Game of Thrones. Mm-mm. Like, so many, like, when I was looking and I compared it to it in the review, I was just like, because there's a lot of comparison, because it's like, overall the story is full of gore, horror, medieval fantasy and adventure and battles, but not even Game of Thrones comes close to
this. The Game of Thrones doesn't handle it in a mature way.
Highly recommend it. True. Very true. But yeah, I highly recommend this. Again, people who are mature readers, y'all take a stab at it. If y'all, I don't know, I don't know if we have children that listen to this show, don't read this yet. I would be surprised if, like, we got like a 13 or a 14 year old listening to the show. I don't know.
Yeah, I'd be like, please, parental guidance is necessary. Yeah. Please.
Yeah. Yeah. Stay in school, kids. Don't do drugs.
And recycle. Reduce, reuse, recycle.
I don't know how to talk. Yes, recycle. That those are things we should tell children. But yeah, so that is the reading corner. Let's get on to TV.
Now, for TV, we both were kind of debating. Well,
oh yeah, that's right.
we kind of came to what's the word? A conclusion of what we're going to discuss, because conclusion. I was kind of, what's the conclusion? I don't know what's going to remember. I think it's the heat, because it's very humid. I was kind of considering wavering between two shows. One is called Three Meals a Day, which is a Korean reality show. It's very interesting. But then I settled on Agretsuko. And now, prayer warning, I haven't watched all of Agretsuko. I've watched only the first 3.5 episodes, but I love this. I love this anime. It's hilarious. Like, laugh a lot. I relate so much to Retsuko so much. And Nisha also watched it. So we were like, you know what? Let's make both. This is, again, where we both ended up discussing the same show or same topic without actually discussing it beforehand, before we started recording. So yeah, that's what we're going to talk about, the Japanese anime, Netflix anime Agretsuko, because this is season 2 we're going to talk about.
Yes. So you, just to make sure I know, so you watched season 1 or did you just go into season 2?
Oh no, I watched season 1 last year when it came out.
Okay. Cool. Perfect. So I just want to, I'll just give y'all a brief summary off the top of my head. So Agretsuko is about Retsuko, who is a red panda, a little red panda, and she lives in Tokyo. And it's basically, you think about, like, it looks like Hello Kitty style, but, like, that's what makes it so cool when the artist has her, like, rage out in metal face, or, like, when she's karaokeing and singing metal music.
Fast.
Oh, I love it. I'm just like, I feel seen. She's just a tiny little girl who is full of rage from all the microaggressions that she has to deal with every day.
Well, it kind of makes sense, because like, part of her name is the Japanese word retsu, which actually means fury or rage. So like, her name is her personality, like fury or rage, right? And it's kind of funny because it comes to this very cute red panda, and I relate to her so much because, like, we're both small and, like, people underestimate me or in a rage.
Yes, let it out. That's me. And then I also love how she's like, I'm a Scorpio. And I'm like, I am too.
Well, I'm a Virgo, so, but yeah.
It's all good. We can just be little West Coast together. Oh my God. But it is just the cutest show. But yeah, basically, I mean, would we call this slice of life if it was a genre to pick from?
Would it be though? I guess, yeah, because like they deal with very real world, real world topics. And the fact that like, her main thing is how she copes with life at work and at home with her mom and like dating and relationships. So I guess you could say it's almost like a drama. But this is the thing that I was going to compare it to, because when you were talking about Berserk, like Berserk, we kind of, when you said like the artist, he does the artwork and the writing at the same time, like that kind of reminded me of a lot of like Asian webtoons where the artwork is done by the writer as well. Yeah. And Iretsuko is not the same way in the fact that it's a like a fully produced show, but the way they discuss like topics of dating and home and parents and that kind of stuff is the same way. So yeah, I guess you might call it Slice Life.
Yeah, I think that's the most accurate one we could think of. But it definitely feels like a drama sometimes. But
yeah.
So yeah, that's Resco. She works in an accounting department at a company. She hates her job. When she has rage built up, she goes to do karaoke to get it out. And that is like her way to get her rage out. And that's her deep secret. She wants no one to know that's what she does. So Dad's just look up background on that. So season two brings us back to Retsuko after season one, which y'all are very encouraged to go watch, because it deals with like stuff about growing up, relationships, dating, hating your job. So then season two continues with hating your job, relationships, but like on the added level of like her mother comes in, we meet Retsuko's mom. And her mom is like the most overbearing mother who's trying to marry her daughter off as soon as possible.
Listen, I relate so much to her this season. So much.
Oh, I felt you there, because my mom, there was recently like this viral story about a guy who was interested in me before. And my mom was like, oh, he almost could have been my son-in-law. I'm like, no, he wasn't. And ever since then, I just be like, I felt like Retsuko. I like, did I mess up something? Was I wrong for not dating him? And like,
Excuse me for the technical difficulties. Continue.
You're good. No, I was just like, I was just venting about like how I felt seeing with Retsuko, because yeah. Parents trying to marry you off. And I mean, like, granted, it's not like my mama is popping up with pictures of men that she photoshopped to persuade me to go on dates with them and marry into their family.
But, yeah.
Like, West Coast mom is wild, y'all. And yeah. I'm trying to think. So you watched the first three episodes. So you've met her mom then.
Mom is funny, but her mom kind of reminds me of my mom too, in they're very good at guilting you without making it seem that they're guilting you. And there's also the reverse psychology, and I was like, this is my mom isn't like trying to marry me off or anything, but like the way she uses like just the way she guilts Retsuko, and like many parents do this, but I was like, that's my mom. Or like when she bought her the dress, I'm like, my mom does that, like she would buy me something. I'm like, I did not ask you to buy me this. And she'd be like, I spent my money. I'm like, I did not ask you to spend your money on me.
Okay.
Like, you didn't wear it, but I don't want to wear it. Like, girl, I'm like, ooh, my mama has done that to me a few times, and it's like, and then there's a part that killed me I think it's the beginning of season episode three, where she, because her mom is trying to marry her off. So like she set her up on a blind date with a polar bear set up through a marriage, what do you call it? Arranged marriage network, right? Mm-hmm. And so the thing that killed me is that she's telling Retsuko, oh, there's nothing wrong with getting set up through like a blind date through arranged marriage network, right? She's like, back in my day, we thought it was kind of weird too, but you know, we all kind of did it. And then afterwards, she's like, oh, I didn't do it, I married your father. And the part that killed me is in Retsuko, like, she's like, hypocrisy! I nearly died. I was laughing. It was like, somebody make that into a gift for me, please.
Oh, it has to be a gift by now. If not, I need to find it.
And that, it was looking for an Uncle Burry.
Yes. It was just like her mom was like shaming her. Just like, well, I didn't need it. I'm like, wow, Mama Retzko.
I was like, wow. Because she was like, your father and I was almost like, it's like love at first sight. She was like, what?
Oh, but it's like, it's so crazy. Because like, that's like a big overarching arc of this season. Of her mom constantly popping up with like, here's a new one, here's a new one. But yeah, the one with the polar bear kind of got me. Because I'm just like, you really photoshopped this polar bear man, like, photo. And like, he ain't even near her age. He like, what, 35? She's 25. So there's a 10-year difference. And like, her mom was literally just trying to, and like, nothing wrong with like age differences, but it's like, her mama just wants to marry her off to anybody.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, the polar bear man, he had a good job. He could provide, but he seems so lax about like getting married or whatever.
Yeah, like he, like, from, and like, based on what I'm seeing for this season, so like the main arc for this season is Retzko ends up dating this donkey.
Yes.
What's his name? Tenado. And so then there's this other, her friend, who's a spotted hyena named Haida. And so apparently there is this whole love thing between them. So I'm spoilers. Apparently from what I'm seeing on Tumblr, she ends up breaking up with Haida, Tenado, because he doesn't want kids and she does. And so she ends up with Haida.
Well, no, actually. So the way it ends is that, so Tenado is the donkey and he, so basically, they date and everything. And he's got this very much like, we don't need marriage. The world is moving and changing. Like, we can just be together forever. I want to be together with you forever, but I don't want to get married.
Married kind of thing. Yeah.
Right. So like, that's his whole thing. It's like, he doesn't want to get married and he doesn't want to have kids. He doesn't see the point. If he doesn't see the point in something, he doesn't do it. And he's like this very techie person where he's like, if he doesn't get it, he won't do it, or he'll try to figure it out. But like, he's just like very set in stone in that way. And Retzko is coming to the realization that she wants to have a family. She wants to get married. She wants, like, she wants that in her life. We're like, in the previous season, she didn't even know if that's what she wanted. But now she knows for sure, which I appreciate. Like, she knows what she wants and she deserves to like find that with somebody who wants to be with her. Not to say like it's sad that they didn't work out. So like, she tells him in like the only way she can, because she's struggling to say it, because he's even like, you can quit your job and do nothing all day now because I'll pay for it because I'm rich. And I'm just like, this is everything she wanted last year. But now it's like, without marriage, she doesn't want it. So it's kind of sad when you see like her break up with him, but like, yeah, Haida and her don't get together at the end of this season. So it's still like, Haida was, he was there to help her confront him about it. Because the whole point that she wanted to break up with him, she wanted to confront him about it, be like, I don't want this. Like I want this. I want to get married. And like, you can respect his whole thing of like, if you don't want to get married, you don't want to have kids, then y'all aren't meant to for each other. Like, it's just not going to work. This is what crosses the line in relationships. And I think that's an important conversation to have, because, like, going back to, like, our previous episode where me and you were, like, dating is hell in 2019. And it's hard. And these are just some of the hard discussions you have to have when you date somebody.
Hard even for red pandas.
It was so sad seeing her break up with him and then be sad, because like, I didn't want her to be with that jackass. Pun intended.
Literally.
Literally. I've been waiting to make that joke for forever. I'm so glad you laughed at it. I mean, it's they seem really well together and she seemed happy, but like, I'm team Haida. I think she should be with Haida. They would be so cute. He likes rock and roll. She likes metal music. It's a match made in heaven. And he's a good friend. But I like that Retzko chose herself at the end.
But that's the important thing, right? Because the whole thing, like, as you said, like, we were discussing last week for this other show that I'm watching, One Spring Night, where it's like the women, and especially it's about women choosing themselves. Yeah, they want to be in relationships, but like, ultimately they want to choose themselves and have to do what's right for them. Like, you can't please everyone, because at the end of the day, if you go into a relationship with someone who makes you unhappy, all the people who want you to be in this relationship with this person for whatever reason, they're not the one who's going to be at home with you at night alone with this person. If this person makes your behind miserable, they're at home living their lives while you're at home miserable trying to please other people who aren't even going to be there to help you get through it, right? So, like, you got to choose yourself first, and, like, you got to do what makes you happy, because, like, you're born by yourself, you die by yourself, right? So, like, do what makes you happy.
I agree. And I mean, like, that's kind of like the important part, is like, her going along with what he wanted would have just meant she would have been resentful and unhappy. Like, and let's go for a large part of things. She, for most people, she struggles with, I think, with confrontation.
And I picked up on that a lot this season, mm-hmm. even in this episode I watched, because last season you understood where she was coming from, because she had just started working in the corporate world, and like that first season was about her adjusting to like leaving college and going into the world of work mm-hmm. and working in a corporate environment, and it's about that adjustment and like learning office politics, as you would say.
Yep.
But this season is about her, like, she's there, she's comfortable, but she's not comfortable enough to, like, if someone does something that she doesn't appreciate, like, she's not comfortable saying it, and is like, she's uncomfortable with confrontation, and she uses the karaoke bar as her outlet for her mm-hmm. frustrations, or even like the bathroom. Like, I remember when I first started working corporate, like, my mom would always say, don't let them see you cry. She's like, if you get upset, go to the bathroom or go sit, and if you can, take a walk around, or if you need to cry, like, go to the bathroom and cry. And I literally, I've done that a few times in my life, where, especially working in the corporate world, like, I've literally gone to the bathroom and like ranted and raved and cried my frustrations out, and then, like, you wash your face and readjust your makeup and you go back upstairs and act like nothing happened. So, like, as I said, I related a lot to Rezuko for that this season, but this season is different because she has a new worker that she's training, which is Anai,
mm-hmm.
and he is, I think he's a Japanese badger, and he's very passive aggressive. So he's like one of these guys that they will do something they know is wrong or inappropriate. And it's not like sexually inappropriate, just like office, just like decorum and like respectful, whatever. And she would like correct him, which is her job as his trainer. And he's very passive aggressive in the fact that he'd be like show on face to the other people in the office. But like, he sent her these rude texts and demanding an apology. And I'm like, yo, bro, you don't answer phone like this. And she's right for telling you, you do not literally shout at the people when they're calling. You answer your phone, or do what I do, put on my receptionist voice, and you speak with decorum and with manners and respect. And then when you hang up the phone, then you can rant and rave. You don't get like a complete idiot on the phone, right? But like, he didn't appreciate it. Every time she corrected him for something, he like sent her this mean text demanding an apology. I'm like, no, that's not how it works. But
that's not how it works. And he's just like, he can't get over the fact that he's not perfect
mm-hmm.
at this new job. And it's like, you're gonna make mistakes. And I think nothing, it's like watching this is like, if you've ever had to train somebody.
I have.
Same. If you've ever had to train somebody on the job and they're just like, well, you told me to do it this way. I'm like, okay, well, first off, that's not how you do that.
Exactly.
That's not you. If I showed you how to do it, let's work back. Well, like, did you skip a step? Did you move too fast? Did you go? Mm-hmm. Were you getting ahead of yourself somewhere? That mm-hmm. is what we need to discuss first, because if you are about to accuse people, and that's the problem, is like, you don't want to own up to the fact that you're not going to be perfect at this right now.
Exactly.
In like, because like Mr. Toad, the boss, he's like, these new college kids, I need you guys to break them in. And like, he's right to a certain extent. Like, these like this kid, he comes out of college, he's like super excited to work with everybody. But as soon as he gets a little criticism or a little feedback, and like constructive criticism, a little feedback, he just like shuts down and is immediately like, well, what did you mean by this? And what did you mean by that? And like this and that. And like, well, I felt that, I felt attacked. And I'm like, okay, I feel like I would choke him just because I cannot do this.
No, you see, the thing that I wanted to ask, and this is why I'm glad we're discussing it, because like, I was raised in the Caribbean from Barbados. So like, at home, it's like pretty standard when we're in secondary school, which is high school for you guys, mm-hmm. a lot of us have jobs. Like, I started working, no joke, one of my first jobs was, it was just today, we go out to the center of the street selling newspapers mm-hmm. on Sunday mornings, and we were like 8 years old, 8, 9 years old. So like, I've always been accustomed to working. And then I went working in department stores at 14, 15. And like, I've had like, I've always been working, right? And I've worked in like office jobs. I've worked as a librarian. I've worked as a receptionist, secretary, nanny, private nanny, working in a daycare center. I've been a barista. I've had all these jobs. And the thing is, I've always wondered is like, because of my experience, I've worked so long and it's so common in the Caribbean, it's so common in Barbados. Like, we learn pretty early how to navigate the world of work. And when I watch a lot of these North American shows, especially particularly American, like these, you and they go to college or university, and it's like, do they not do work? What do you call it? Here in Canada, they're called co-op programs, where it's like when you're at college or even in high school, they start from high school where you can go and work in an office and you get credits towards, you can get credits towards your diploma, or when you're in high school, it's counted towards your final grades and it helps you get a scholarship, or when you're applying for a job, it helps you get a job quicker and whatever, because it shows you have work experience. And I'm wondering, like, do they not do that in America? Is it like not standard for, like, you know, we always watch kids shows where people like working at McDonald's or whatever, that's standard. But the thing is like, is it not part of the college curriculum, or part of the college process, where you have to go and work to go and acclimate and get used to working in whatever field you want, whether it's architecture or whatever? I'm like, because when you watch these shows and these movies, it always baffles me. I'm like, do you not know how to answer a phone? Like, there's like, it boggles my mind. I like, for this in the Agrisuku, it's the same thing. I'm like, dude, like, you know, do you not know how to answer phone? Like, is this how you answer phone when you're home? Right? So it's like, and like, Agrisuku is Japanese, which is, but it's the same kind of thing, right? Like,
I mean, I think that's a good point, because like, culturally, I would assume like where it's based, or maybe like, I guess it depends on like where the author was basing it on. Cause culturally I would assume that like this person who came out of college maybe like already had an internship, but yeah, I'm going from the assumption that he didn't have an internship.
Yeah. I'm guessing so, because Agrisuku is, well, it's Japanese anime. It's like written and produced by a Japanese production company. But there's a lot of things that do feel kind of North American-ish to me. And I guess because I read, especially when it comes to Japan, like a lot of their stuff is made to appeal to North American audiences, right? Especially because it's for Netflix. It's Netflix is licensed for Netflix, right? So it's produced and made for Netflix. So like, they know that their product is like being licensed by a North American company. So I get the feeling that there's a lot of cultural stuff, like with regards to the arranged marriages and like the hierarchy and like that kind of stuff is very cultural to like Japan. But there's certain things that do feel like very North American-ish to me. So like, I'm guessing that's where it is, because I do know a little bit about Japanese culture from when I took the classes, but like, they do work programs on co-ops too. So I was like, huh? But I'm not going to get too deep into it, but it's just something that I was like, these are simple things that like, when, as you said, when you have to train people, you have to get accustomed to, and you have to learn to hold back. So like, for Agrisuku, I kind of related to her for that, because she has all this bottled up, like not rage, but frustration. Well, yeah, rage too. Frustration and rage that she can't express to, like, especially to her superiors and now to this guy that she's training. But I think it's great that even if she can't do it at home with her mom or at work, she's able for her personal life to say, I'm going to put my foot down, I'm going to stand up for what's right for me romantically. Mm-hmm. And I like that, but at least in that one aspect of her life, she's able to like speak up for herself, and she's able to like tell the other person what she wants and what she needs.
Yeah, I agree. Because it's like, well, one, I want to touch on, so from my experience, before I got my first full-time job, a requirement for my degree was that I had to have an internship. So like, that was my college. I think it varies from place to place for curriculum. I think more and more people realize you can't get a job. It's not going to be easy to get a job out of college without having some internships, like unless you've been working somewhere for a whole year and you can prove that you've gained experience there, it's hard to get a job without an internship, without already having done an internship. So for me, but then like, even then, like you said, like you started working like when you were pretty young. I started working when I was 14. I mean, 12, if you count babysitting and being a nanny, but like I started working when I was 14 and my first job was working at Subway, and it was hell. My first actual job, like with people paying, giving me a check, was working at Subway. And that humbles you. And from there, I have had to clean houses for a summer. I have worked in a bakery. I have worked at Walmart. Mm-hmm. I have worked in so many various places that sometimes I have to look back, and outside of like my marketing career, at what I did before I even got into marketing, and everything I learned from those experiences, I have taken into like my full-time career, because jobs truly do build character. Like
they do.
Like when your parents tell you that, oh, it's going to build character. It's going to be like, they're not lying. I can tell my mom and dad they were right. Cause truthfully, I hate to think of like, and I don't think I naturally am like this, like pompous, like very full of myself person either. But like, when I think about people who have like had no work experience, I'm not making any assumptions for people like it, but like, you know, the stereotype is like, they feel that they are owed everything. And that like, so it's kind of like seeing that character feel like he deserved to be like his hand held more. Instead of vocally saying, I'm struggling, I don't get it, can you assist me further? Like, can you help me a little bit more? Like, instead he feels like he doesn't, like he makes progress because the hippo is the mother in the office, and she finds a way to help him learn. And I'm just like, because at some point he was getting annoying and he just wasn't doing any work from anybody. Like Haida had to step in and tell him to cut it out. And like, it's like, this is not professional. And this is your first job.
Yeah. And I'm like, he's a white Japanese badger, right? And the first thing that came to my mind was like, he's a white dude. Like if this was a black woman or another woman of color that did the things he did, I'm like, they'd be out through the door so quick, so fast. Like, You get it with a lot of foolishness. Because
even
people are making
it easy
for him, the boss, right?
He did it to everyone. Oh, no, he did it to Toad. He does it to Toad, too.
He does it to the boss?
Yeah, it goes to everybody. And it's like, because like Toad hits him with like, new meat, go get me tea. He's like, that's not part of my job. And like, which anybody should have said that at any point. But anyways.
Yeah, I wanted to do that. I've done that a couple of times where I'd be like, I'm sorry, but that's not in my job description. I've said that a couple of times. But as an intern, it kind of is in your job description as learning. But it depends also, because sometimes you'd be like, I didn't spend all this money to be running around serving coffee. But you're like, if everyone else is doing it, then that's fine. Like, because like, if I remember correctly, for the office, like it's a schedule, right? There's a schedule where like each person has a day where they do like they bring coffee for the boss and whatever. So I'm like, dude, everyone else is doing it, so there's nothing wrong with you doing it. But if it's like he's treating you as his personal girlfriend, you're like, this is not what I came here to do. There, that's a different story. But yeah, like I met people like Anai, and it's be like, dude,
yeah. No,
I swear.
Just do your job and listen. Like when I was just like, when Haida had to step in, I was like, that's my boy. I'm so proud. Look at our boy go. Haida was just like, I'm done with this shit. I'm tired of you like being mean and being backhanded and being toxic. And because like he had everybody fooled thinking that like Retsuko was being mean and like making her feel isolated from her own friends.
Yeah.
Like that just got on my nerves. So yeah. That was really good writing. But that's just overall, I agree with you. Like I liked seeing that like Retsuko like felt more confident in herself. Like I feel like she has confidence, but it's more like the whole confrontation and talking about the hard things. Because I think last year what I liked a lot was that she was able to have like the confidants of like Gori and the secretary bird. What is her name?
She is, oh Lord,
there's so many names.
I'm looking up now. She is. There's the donkey, the panda, the tortoise. Because there's a thing where they have all the characters and their species. Miss Washimi.
Oh, yes, Washimi. So yeah, when she made the friendship with. Yes. And she's a secretary. I just like every time I'm just like I look at her lashes and I'm like, when I looked up what those birds look like in real life, I'm like, they really have the most prettiest lashes.
They do. They have like super long lashes and they have like these very dramatic feathers around their eyes and their tail. So they're very flamboyant. I'm like, yes.
I thought peacocks were full of themselves. I'm like, okay. So her like Gori and Washimi, I liked, my favorite thing about like season 2 was that Retzko was able to find people that she connected with. And I even liked that they were like her mentors in a way. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that we continued to see them and their friendship outside, like, of course, outside of work, because they don't really interact at work, but outside of work, it was nice to see them like grow more. But like, they were there to help Retzko like get her point across to the guy. And Haida stepped up and like he was able, and he helped too. So it was just nice to see that she has these people around her to help her get what she wants out, but like no one's speaking for her.
Yeah.
Like you said, it's her picking herself and what she wants. And she's totally in her right to do that. Because I feel like if I were to be in a relationship with somebody and we find out that we both have a deal breaker, I'm like, there's like, we can try to make it work. But like, if it's a deal breaker for both of us, I don't think it's something that's going to be resolved.
There's some things you can't compromise on.
Yeah, there's just some things you can't compromise on, and it sucks to break up, but it's like, it's better to break up than for you to suffer in silence and be unhappy. And as happy as she was with him, it's better for her to not be unhappy later on. So that is Agretsuko. Y'all go watch that. Highly recommended. I can't wait for season 3 already. So I might have to binge this again. So now to wrap up things, let's go on to the movie corner.
So for me, I'm not going to be very long with this which is kind of funny to say for a Marvel film, but I'm going to discuss Spider-Man Far From Home. So this is the second Spider-Man standalone film in the Marvel MCU. Technically, that's being rhetorical, Carolyn. It's the Marvel Cinematic Universe, otherwise known as the MCU. Mm-hmm. And this one is the one recently released. And this takes place after Avengers Endgame, which we all know came out and shattered everyone's heart. So this is taking, I believe, a year after what we, outside the MCU, you call the snap, but in their world, they're calling it the blink, because literally for them, people disappeared in a blink of an eye and reappeared in a blink of an eye.
Okay.
I still kind of prefer the snap, though.
Snappier.
Sounds better.
Say the snap. Yeah.
Yeah, it would have been cool if they had actually referred to it as the snap in the film, because that would have been like a little bit meta nod to the fans and say, yeah, we see you, we got you. Yeah. But I thought that would have been pretty cool. So it takes place a year after. So the short synopsis of it is, following the events of Avengers Endgame, Spider-Man must step up to take on the new threats in the world that has changed forever. So in this one is very, I think it was a very good step for them to have Homecoming. Sorry, to have Endgame, to have Far From Home kind of like come up after Endgame. And because, you know, they had already announced this film like when Homecoming came out. So we all knew there was going to be a Spider-Man film after Endgame, which was like, I don't understand what Marvel was thinking marketing wise, but you know, they were like, we at least knew who was going to survive based on that announcement. But for this one, I did not really like. I liked it. I didn't love it like Homecoming. I loved Homecoming. This one, I'm like, if it was to rate it out of 5, I'd probably give it a 2.5. It's not bad. It just wasn't as exciting for me as the other films. Like, you know what I mean? I don't know if it's because I have MCU fatigue. And maybe just because I have MCU fatigue and I'm just like, I just need a break from these films. It could be that, but it wasn't that exciting for me. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, I can get that. I'm going to see this week. So feel free to like, if there's anything like glaring that you just did not like, feel free to let it out.
To me, there's some plot holes in it, things that didn't make sense, and there's some tropes in it I'm just sick and tired of seeing in films, especially ones that focus on teenagers. Okay, so like the biggest plot hole to me is, we all know that when the snap happened, literally half the universe died. And then when Tony snapped at the end of Endgame, the half that died came back. No.
Well, when Hulk snapped, it was Hulk snap that brought everybody back.
Was it Hulk snap? Wasn't it Tony snap?
No. Tony snap.
The Hulk
kills
snap
Thanos.
Brought back half. Right. Yes. Yes. Sorry. Thank you for correcting me. Because when he snapped his hand, disintegrated and the burst, right? Yeah, we had this whole scene with the bird and like, oh, look at the bird. And then it was like, ooh, boom, explosion. So they came back. So the thing was, we knew that people that went, that were snapped, came back the 5 years later and they did not age, right? Mm-hmm. So now that I think about it, imagine a mom losing her baby and the baby coming back. Oh my goodness.
Girl.
Talk about trauma, but imagine. But that literally just occurred to me as I'm sitting here talking to you. But yeah, imagine a woman who gave birth and the baby died and then the baby comes back as a brand new baby 5 years. Wow. Yeah. Mind blown. But anywho, I digress. But in their school, so like this is so stupid to me. So, and this is something that we had discussed when we discussed the film for the special Endgame podcast episode, like what were they going to do for students that disappeared and come back. So what they did is they had people who were leaving school redo their last year. Now I'm going to tell you why this literally does not make sense.
The ones who disappeared came back. If I was a senior...
If you were a senior and you were ready to graduate, mm-hmm. you had to redo your last year to accommodate the people that came back. Does that make sense?
Why would I do that?
Does that shit make sense?
Why would I do that?
Why? It literally does not make sense to me.
Why would I do
that? Why would they make them redo their last year? That literally makes no sense.
So I gotta be a fifth year senior?
You.
I gotta be a fifth year senior.
Yes.
Why?
But no. Here's the rub, the part that didn't make sense to me. So we all know it's like half. So just thinking mathematically. Mm-hmm. So the mathematical probabilities of half of it should be that half of Peter's school disappeared, right?
Yeah.
And half came back. Mm-hmm. Now can you tell me why out of the main cast, there's only one student that ages, and that's the one, that's a character named Brandon, played by Remy Hai. Can you tell me why he's the only one who's 21 years old attending this school from what I saw? Like, he's the only one that you can tell visibly aged. So, like, because the way they kind of showed it is they had... And it's so stupid. It's like the character that was supposed to be his character is way younger. So like he would have been like 15 then. And they have an actor in, like, they show like a picture of him like as when he was that age, who is clearly a preteen. Like this actor is like clearly 14, 15. And now you have Remy Hai, who's supposed to be this character 5 years later. So he's redoing high school at 21 years old. Does that shit make sense to you?
No.
And does it make sense to have this actor who looks like the age he's supposed to be, 21, surrounded by other actors who are acting more immature? And even though they're all literally in real life the same age, mm-hmm. but the way they have them acting and dressed, that you can tell there's a difference in mannerisms. Like, he seems more mature. And it doesn't make sense. I'm like, but like, this is such a glaring flaw. This is something that a lot of people are talking about at the end of Endgame. Like, what are you going to do? Like, okay, they came back. Let them finish high school. Why are you going to have students who are 21 years old? Like,
that
what?
Doesn't make sense. So,
it doesn't
sorry.
Make sense.
I just have to say real quick, that doesn't make any sense because, and I'm going off of like, one of my examples is an anime. So there's an anime called Sword Art Online. In the anime, the characters who were playing this new like net gear thingy, like that they put on their head and they go, like they virtually go into the game, like their mind goes into the game.
Yeah.
So you basically go asleep and you like, and then you're playing the game. Mm-hmm. So plot twist, not really, it happens in the first episode. Everybody gets trapped in the game when they were in the game.
Right. That kind of reminds me of a film, but anyway, continue.
So they get trapped in the game and literally then they find out if you die in the game,
you die in real life.
You die in real life.
Yep.
So what happens at the end of the series, like eventually the people who get out of the game, like the person who wins, and somebody has to beat the game in order for everybody to be free. So they beat the game, they're set free. So what they do, this makes sense. Everybody, because like it was in the like in Japan, it was nationwide. People mm-hmm. were stuck in the game. I think they said around 40,000 people. And of those 40,000, there were maybe like 15,000 kids who were playing the game.
Like memories of the Alhambra. That happens like in the you remember we talked about this, like in the game. Like, if people die in the VR game, like they literally die in real life. But whatever injuries they sustain, like they sustain in real life too. But yeah, it's the same. Yeah, but that literally just popped in my head. But yeah.
Yes, we did talk about this. So yeah, exactly like that. So when they get the students who were in high school, when they literally didn't make anybody come back with them. They had the kids who came out of the game. They made a school, which was already existing. They just had them all go to that school. And so they could catch up.
That makes sense to you, right?
That makes sense. Like, why make the people who were living here and going through this hell by themselves, which I'm sorry, it's already hard enough that all my friends are dead. I mean, granted, maybe they want to give me the option if I want to go back and like finish another year with them. Cool. Mm-hmm. Give me an option. But making me have to go back and finish school doesn't make any sense. Like, the world didn't stop completely.
No, like the world went on, like people aged. Tony had a 5-year-old daughter. And then the other kicker is, and it just occurred to me, Ned, who apparently it seems, it's not clear, but I'm going to have to rewatch this again because it just doesn't make sense. Ned, mm-hmm. I'm assuming, got dusted too. But yes, so he came back and he's dating a girl who stayed, which means she's like older than him. What? Because when they disappeared, Peter was in, because he's 16. When they disappeared, they were 16.
They were 15.
Okay. So she's 5 years older than, well, technically six, because this is taking place a year after they came back.
Okay.
So what? I'm like, did these men who wrote this, and like the writers are Steve Ditko, Chris McKenna, Eric Sommers. I'm like, did they even think about this? Because there's another thing that happens that bugs the hell out of me. And it's this, like, I think my main thing with this, that I'm in this whole review that I'm doing is, I'm going to try not to go on too long, but it's like just things that just bug me about this one, which stopped me from like fully enjoying it. Mm-hmm. And there's this character, this woman, and so she's supposed to be working for Nick Fury. And for Happy, like, now that Tony's gone, he has to rely more on Happy and Nick Fury to like operate and do whatever. Mm-hmm. And so she has a new suit. So she says she has a new suit for him. And they're in Budapest. No, they're in Prague. So like, Nick Fury is like, okay, there's this woman here. She's like an operative or whatever. And so she has a new suit for Peter. Says she has a new suit. So she goes in the row into the, he goes into the room where she is. And she's this boy that she does not know, this 16-year-old boy that she does not know, she's going to be like, take off your clothes. She's supposed to be giving him the suit. And I'm like, is this shit supposed to be funny and humorous? I'm like, no, this is a 16-year-old boy that a grown woman is telling to take off his clothes. Like, if you have a suit for him to put on, leave the freaking room. Why are you still in there? And it's supposed to be laughed off as being humorous. I'm like, this shit is not funny. It bugged me. I'm like, did no one see a problem with this? Like,
yeah.
Is it because we know Tom Holland is like 26 or whatever? Is it because we all know that Tom Holland is this age that we kind of buy into it? I'm like, no, this character is supposed to be 16, people. Get it right and stop with this stupidness. I'm like, and it's a trope that we see. Like,
It's not like if it was a doctor, I would like, okay, funny. Like, if she's an actual doctor, like a doctor, that's it. Like,
but even then, you have a parent coming to the room because he's a minor.
Well, no, yes, that that's the creepy thing. But he's I guess the thing is like, because it's S.H.I.E.L.D. and everything, and I don't know if it's because people don't know how to treat Peter as like Peter, like Tony understood that he was a child.
Exactly. Like, yeah. He did ask him to be there are certain things that Tony did that I didn't like, but there's other things that I'm like, even Tony would have been like, no. This is inappropriate. And I'm like, this is inappropriate. Does no one see this? Do we have to remember Peter is still 16 years old? And like, I think that's a problem that I'm having with Marvel and this character, is because they're forgetting his age. They're forgetting what his age is supposed to be. And I'm going to tell you, this is how you can compare this to Black Panther. Now, Shuri is a teenager, and you remember that she's a teenager with all of her intellect and everything. She's still treated like a teenager. She still acts like a teenager. People remind her that she's a teenager, so that it's at the forefront of your mind when she does her system. You're like, okay, this is a teenager saying this. Mm-hmm. But with Peter, it's like people forget he's supposed to be a teenager. Like he's not a fully grown adult. He's not even 18 or 17. He's 16.
Yeah.
And still in high school, you have this grown woman, this stranger, telling him to strip in front of her. And that bothered me. And no,
they tried comedy. It works there,
And it's supposed to be humorous. But then the thing that bothered me about that is that so the character Brandon, who's played by Remy Hui, he apparently has a thing for MJ. So again, we have this whole needless this thing for a love triangle that we don't need.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It wasn't needed because we all know that he was going to end up with MJ anyway. But then, so he comes into the room. He sees Peter taking off his clothes in front of this woman. And before he would be like, and he's supposed to be an adult, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Before he looks and say, what are you doing in here with this boy? Like, what is going on? He's going to run out and leave Peter. And he'd be like, I'm going to go tell MJ.
Oh,
he's going to tattle because he wants to be with MJ. So he's going to go and tattle to MJ that I'm going to tell her he took a picture.
What?
He took a picture because like Peter had his pants off. So you can see him in his shirt and his underwear. He took a picture and then he's like, I'm going to go tell MJ that you're doing this because she needs to know. I'm like, no, what? You need to go tell a teacher. You need to go tell a teacher that a 16-year-old boy is like stripping in a room with a grown adult. Like that should be your priority right now. Like you're an adult. Like.
I'm dying.
Did no one think this shit through?
This boy is 21 years old, and he's going to go take this picture and tattle.
I was going to the teacher. I'd be like, teacher, there's a woman in here. But Peter, like, I don't know what the hell is going on, but you need to come see this.
It's also hella inappropriate that he's pursuing MJ.
Thank you!
It's inappropriate. Like, and I guess it's the concept that, like, they don't, the ones who, and I think it would be the ones who came back would feel that maybe more. Like the ones who came back like, oh, you were just my age. Of course it's fine for us to be together. I'm like, no,
because she doesn't even really like him anyway. So that's why I said, like, it's not as if she's showing interest in him. It's like, it's one thing she was showing interest in, like, there's potential here. But there isn't no need for this stupid love triangle because that reminds me so much of one of those John Hughes movies. I'm like, we do not need a stupid love triangle trope. Why can't he just be a friend to MJ? Why can't he be her friend?
No, girl.
Why can't he be Ned's friend?
You know they're not going to do that.
So it bothered me. But the thing with his character, the only thing that I appreciate the character is he's the only one with common sense. But the thing, which is another part that pissed me off, and I told my sister about this. So, like, first and first, you have Nick Fury who diverts their group to Prague. And I'm like, is no one, none of the teachers are going to question why their bus driver is driving to Prague.
Of course
this is
not.
Literally kidnapping. This is Nick Fury kidnaps a bus full of high school students. This is illegal as hell, one. And the teachers aren't questioning it, two. So the teachers are stupid is what you're telling me again. And then there's a part where Peter leaves the group. After all the shenanigans in Vienna and Prague, like they're like, okay, we're gonna go home because this trip is like bogus and whatever. They're going home, and Brandon is like, again, with a light bulb, he's like, is no one going to question the fact that Peter Parker, a minor, is missing? Is no one going to question that this boy has ups and left? I am like, thank you. Are the teachers not going to worry? Because he's like, so what, we're just supposed to buy that this guy went to a family event? He's like, he has no family. Peter Parker only has his Aunt May. What family event are you people talking about? He was an orphan.
I do like the whole, like, let's show how incompetent the adults are.
And it's so stupid. It's not only the teachers, like, even the other students, I'm like, is no one going to question that? Like, he just ups and leaves with what luggage? He didn't even take any luggage. That's what he's saying. He's like, where is he going? Is he like, does no one find it weird that this boy leaves all the time? He's a student. Like, you teach, he's like, are you going to be concerned? And the part that pissed me off is MJ's like, what, are you jealous or whatever? I'm like, he's like, no. He's like, this should be concerning you. Like, so because one student says a line that I think is completely stupid, like the adults in the group are going to take her word over the other adult who's like saying, like, does no one see a problem here? And like, those kind of stupid inconsistencies ruin it for me. And then there's a whole thing with a spoiler plot point. You know this. You guessed it, actually, when you told me what you thought the plot was going to be, where Mysterio is actually betraying and he's lying. Where is like, so, okay, so he has these things that are the holograms. They're the monsters we see, and they're supposed to be elementals or whatever.
I knew it.
And they're holograms. All of this freaking destruction. They're holograms. So, like, the holograms are created by these drones that can, like, create, like, little, like, that do have weapons. But the scale of the destruction does not match the number of drones that they have. And I'm like, you had, like, all of these buildings falling. I'm like, ain't nobody going to question where these, like, how? Like, so much shit don't make. I know I'm like supposed to suspend disbelief, but still, like I can't suspend disbelief, but I can't suspend common sense, people. I'm like, right, you're asking way too much of me.
Do you think it's because part of it is like, because you work with kids, right?
Yeah, I do. I work at a public school.
Do you think part of it is because of that? Because I mean, like, I think you made all the very common sense comments there. I mean, because I agree. Like, I as a if you're working with kids, if you like know you're responsible for them, you would be like, "Where is this child? Like, no, let me meet your family."
Exactly. You can't just wander off and like no one like what? Like you have to get permission from the schools. Like, well, you get a phone call saying that thing. That's not how shit works.
I think it would be more fun. So do you remember the Lizzie McGuire movie?
Vaguely. I watched it, okay. But vaguely remember. I remember she, but she was like, there was, because she was a teenager. Was she like 14 or something going off with this big car Batman?
Girl, this is when it just made no sense. When yes, it made no sense. I think the boy who was in Italy, I think he was like 15 or 16, and like she was 14. So that was the whole thing. Like he was a teenager, she was a teenager. But you saw like how many. I think what's more funny is like the excuses that she had to come up with, and then she would go and sneak out to go and do these things. Like, if, I think it would be more then, funny. I think it would be more funny if, like, Peter was making up crazy excuses or like, "Oh, I'm sick, I can't go," and then like go.
But no,
like,
he just wanders off. Like, right. No one. Like, come on.
I think that's more funny. Like, what is it called? The what's his name's days off? Ugh, I'm in Chicago.
Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yes, Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Like, because I feel like the Spider-Man franchise really likes the nostalgia-ish things. Like,
how the films from those 80s, right? I think that's why I'm saying, like, the whole thing trope reminded me of, like, excuse the fireworks, people. It's Canada Day here, so there's people sending off fireworks all over my neighborhood.
No worries.
But, yeah, I think they're copying, like, a lot of those films from the 80s, like John Hughes and whatever. And I'm like, stop it. It's 2019. These stupid tropes, they're not entertaining. I mean,
if you're going to do it, at least make it more entertaining.
You can make it more entertaining, but then, like, just don't. Like, just how about, like, there's only for the love triangle that we know is never going to come to fruition.
Oh, that can
I'm tired of them making the adults complete idiots. I'm like, these are people who went to university. They're teachers. They're science teachers. They're supposed to be smart. How sway do you, are you making them lack so much common sense? Like, why? It's not funny. It's aggravating and frustrating. Writers, please stop doing this. Please. I'm so tired of seeing adults made into complete buffoons just so you can have teenagers come with implausible excuses to get away with things that they don't need to get away with. Like, I mean, they kidnapped the whole bus. No one is going to question that?
Of course not. But we got, like, what, maybe one more movie of him being in high school? So I kind of just want him to, like, I kind of want to see a time skip, even as much as I hate the time skip tropes. I kind of want to see a time skip with him. Or just be out of school. Just be out of high school.
Not even going into college. Just, like... Because like, going into college, that would be more school shenanigans, isn't it?
That would be the ones that Tobey McGuire. Shield. He can just work. He can just be, like, you know.
Yeah, he don't need to go to college.
I mean, he don't have to. College would just really be a cover. They could say he's enrolled and he can pop in when he wants to. But, like, truthfully, he can work at Shield and go to school there.
Yeah, exactly.
Learn with the smartest people ever.
Go work with Riri. Show us Riri.
That's what I'm saying. Yes, I'm waiting. I'm calling it. I'm putting it out into the universe. Riri has to come through. I want her to come in, like, because Spider-Man's age, that's the only reason, like, I really want him to stay where he is right now. I just want it to be like, this is like, he's now the Iron Man, where he's like reaching out, like, he's like a branch, or what is it called, like a degree away from like the next generation of Avengers.
But that's, like, kind of what they hinted at in this film, right? Like, literally, not even hinted at, like, big bold, that's what they kind of telegraphed with one of the plot points of the film. Exactly. And, like, I'm fine with that, but, like, if they're going to do that, this could be a great way to introduce Riri Williams, because, like, if he goes to work with S.H.I.E.L.D. and he goes to work at Star Industries, have her be one of the interns there. So I'm done. I'm not going to harp anymore on it. Like, when you watch it, the two of us can discuss it, like, that you'll see what I mean. There's a lot more stuff that does not make sense to me. Okay. I was like, meh.
I think, yeah, I'm like, I want to see it because it's like, it's the first movie after Endgame. But like I told you, I guessed a bunch of the plot, like just from like what I saw. And it's not like I take joy in like guessing the plot. It's more like, I want to know what to expect. But at the same time, I am looking forward because like now we're seeing the world after everything that happened in Endgame. But like, it is kind of disappointing when you just like hear like the little things where it's like, okay, I know we're not going to unpack every tiny little thing that happened after the snap and then after the second snap, but it's kind of like, this is where we should have had Daredevil, Luke Cage, and Jessica Jones. The other one could go away, but this is where, and Punisher, those shows should have stayed because it would have been interesting and really good to see the snap's effects on those characters and their worldview.
Yes.
Versus we're never gonna get that unpack, like that impact in the movies. Like we'll get it, but we're not gonna get as an in-depth as it is.
Right, because like what they could have done was like how we saw in Endgame, like how the team was functioning in that 5 years. The shows could have been taking place in that 5 years, right? Because this is where they, as superheroes, would have really been needed because they didn't have the Avengers or whatever. This is where they could have really shined. And this is where they could have taken the show, like show us these superheroes now becoming more involved in their communities because you no longer have the Avengers, right? So that would have been interesting to see. But alas, we can't. No, well, there are those shows. They probably don't think they're going to be on Disney Plus, right? No. But anyway, so that was my review.
I think it's more like they're not going to happen anymore. They might come back maybe 5 or 10 years from now or never. Mm. But we will never see those people be them again, which makes me more mad. Yeah. I would like to see I mean, most of them kind of like wore and tore me down. But like Punisher could come back. Mm. Frank Castle can always come back. But they won't let me be happy.
So that's my review of Spider-Man Far From Home.
Got it.
Meh. 2.5.
I will hit you up when I go see it, I think tomorrow.
I will say Jake Gyllenhaal was just as fine as ever, and he really is a great actor. And I think he really did a really good job with the character. Mm-hmm. And I think he's a good villain. He could have been a little bit less stereotypical. There's some aspects of his character are very stereotypical, but I kind of like how they show like when they revealed what the origin of his character is, like how his character he kind of became a serial. Like that's interesting. So I like Jake Gyllenhaal. I like his performance, and like the performances were fine. Like the performances were good. The CGI, the VFX, all of that was good. The score was really good. Everything, but the story itself was.
Well, that is good to know because yes, I'm going mostly for Jake Gyllenhaal. That's another one of my men.
Him and his beard. Hey.
The little man with a good beard.
Fine, he's looking fine. I ain't gonna lie, he's looking fine, sir. Fine.
Yes, he has aged well. You know what? We're gonna go down a thirst spiral, so I'm gonna pull us out, and I'm gonna talk about. I'm gonna keep it brief because I feel like this my review will be brief of it. Toy Story 4.
Ooh.
So it's a movie. I feel the same as you. I don't know if I'd give it a 2, but there's just like there's things I'd love about it, but there's also things like, so you've watched all the Toy Story movies, correct?
I have.
Okay, as have I. As any,
well, I haven't watched 4, but spoil it away.
Oh yeah, but yeah, I'll get the spoilers. So with Toy Story, where we went from like Toy Story 1-3, I felt at the end of Toy Story 3. That was a great way to close that chapter on those characters. It's not that I didn't want to see a Toy Story 4. It's just that I was like, you know what? It's fine if this is where we end. It is okay if this is where the story ends. But then, you know they're going to keep going because they like did a short movie, like a 30-minute movie, some specials and other stuff with like with the characters still, with the new child, Bonnie, having the toys. So it's, yeah. So I'm just going to give y'all a brief summary. So The film continues from Toy Story 3, where Sheriff Woody and Buzz Lightyear, among their other toy friends, have found new appreciation after being given by Andy to Bonnie. They are introduced to Forky, a spork that has been made into a toy, and embark on a road trip adventure. I would say this, it's been a year, I'm assuming. It's been some time since Andy gave Bonnie his toys, and like he like gave her the responsibility of taking care of them and like playing with them and everything. So now, after all this time, Bonnie's gotten like Woody isn't a favorite toy anymore. Bonnie rarely plays with him ever. Mm-hmm. Like she even takes off his sheriff badge and puts it on Jesse. Like Jesse is probably her favorite. Yeah. It is brutal when she picks him up and then takes the badge, because he thought he was going to get played with. And it's just like, oh, Woody. So keep in mind, Woody's been a toy for like since the 40s. Mm-hmm. And he's always been a favorite toy. Like he was Andy's dad's toy. He was probably Andy's grandpa's toy. And he's just been passed down to family. So he's used to like, he's not used to like having the, come to acceptance of not being a favorite toy. So he's dealing with the crisis of not knowing what his identity is anymore. So... Mm. I liked that level of it. Then enters Forky. Bonnie makes a friend out of trash, basically. She takes... Oh. Yeah, because Woody follows her to school and like she sees she doesn't have any arts and crafts supplies. And then like by some chance, she like he grabs a whole bunch of stuff out of the trash bin, tosses it, but no one sees him. And she makes a toy to help her feel like comforted at school, because you're not so, and it's her first day, it's like kindergarten orientation, so she's trying to get used to her first day at school. So all that happens, I really want to unpack, not like in depth or anything, but like the children in the Toy Story world can imbue life into inanimate objects as long as they feel that thing is a toy. That's what I took from this. It's like,
well, that kind of makes sense.
Yeah, because it's like, it's basically they imbue their imagination into the piece, so now they are living. And like that's not some major like altering thing, but it's like, okay. And it's new for the toys too. So that's one part of the plot. The other part of it is when they go on this road trip, Forky is determined to become trash. So that's, I guess, an interesting part about it is that Forky doesn't want to be a toy. Essentially, Forky doesn't want to live. Forky wants to be trash. Forky wants to be thrown out.
That's interesting. So they're thinking he has a fatalistic personality.
Right. But it's not like something they're going to dive deep into, but it's just something I thought about, like, he didn't want to be alive. He didn't want to be here. He wants to be trash. So it's kind of like Woody's convincing him of like, you're a toy now. Bonnie loves you. You have like so much more now. And then like you give her comfort. And then eventually Forky comes to understand like, oh, okay. I get it. I'm a toy now. So I guess that's kind of like, that's cute, whatever. But like, they're not going to dive into like the fork not wanting to be alive. Which of course, it's a child's movie. I don't expect anybody to try and unpack that in a child's movie. But to fast forward, Woody, by some chance on this road trip, him and Forky get separated from the group. They come across a store and like a pawn shop or an antique store, and he sees Bo Peep's lamp. So Bo Peep was from the first and second movie, which I guess is like Woody's love interest.
Yeah, I like her. She's pretty badass and funny in this one.
Mm-hmm. I really like this. So that was one of my most favorite things, is just like seeing Bo Peep go from like this fragile, what I assumed was like porcelain doll kind of thing. Like, you know, like porcelain hands and porcelain. Yeah, she is porcelain. Like porcelain hands and face and arms. And then like you see that like after she was like basically given away, and then she chose to become a lost toy because she didn't want to live her life stuck on a shelf collecting dust. And I'm like, yes, Bo Peep, go live your life and and do you. So it was like, it was kind of, I really liked that part about it. Do you want me to spoil the end?
Sure.
So I don't know how to feel about this, because in a way I'm happy, but then in a way it's kind of like, meh, sad. So at the end of it, so I guess one thing is like, No, I won't spoil the middle part. But yeah, so at the end of it, Woody decides to stay with Bo Peep and become a lost toy with her.
Oh, okay.
So he, and it's like, he's truly understanding that, like, he has to choose his own path. He doesn't have to be somebody's toy. He can be his, I guess it's like, he can be his own person. He can be with her. And
so how do lost toys operate then? Do they just wander around the country?
So basically the way they operate, in a way, yes. But the way they operate is that they were like, they'll go to a playground. Like, they'll pick places to play, like, to be played with. So, like, they'll, like, there's toys at the playground and all these kids come to the playground and they play with the toys. So it's they kind of, like, pop up at places where they know kids are going to be at, and they play with the kid and they get played with. And it's like, but also it's like Bo Peep's kind of thing is like, I get to do what I want. Nobody owns me. I get to play when I want to play. Like, it's like, oh, that is kind of sweet. That is cute. Like the way they put it. And then, like, they also find that their mission now is to help toys find their kids.
Right.
So I'm like, oh, that's sweet. Like, Woody's found his purpose. But it kind of makes me feel like how Iron Man dies at the end of Endgame. It's not, like, I was sad that Tony died. But it's kind of like, I wanted Tony to just be out of commission. I didn't want him to be gone. So it's kind of like with this one, where do you go with the Toy Story franchise? Do you continue with the core group? Because I imagine they're not going to keep going with Woody. Like, Woody's off doing his own thing with Bo Peep. So they're not going to continue things with Buzz. And I mean, I would assume, because 4 seems like an odd number, a weird number to end a movie franchise on. So is it just that, like, the franchise continues with the other toys? I don't know.
That'd be interesting. Or maybe they introduce new toys. But then I'd be kind of like starting off the story again with Buzz, right?
Yeah, I think that's the thing. And I mean, like, I think about it too. Like, Buzz is like over 10 years old. So it's kind of like Buzz is still like a toy. Jesse and all them. Like, and okay, so that was my one of my gripes. It's like, you don't get much of Jesse in this movie, or much of Buzz and Woody together in the movie. Like, there's just not that bond where you see, like, all the toys bonding together. Granted, they couldn't do it with, like, the story and everything, but I just thought, like, oh, I really missed, like, if this was, like, their final goodbye, it would have been cool if, like, Jesse was, like, with Buzz when he went looking for Woody. Like, I don't know. It just felt like a piece was missing to me. But, like, to your answer your question, I think, I guess it's like, maybe they do just continue it and they introduce new toys and maybe they'll end it at Toy Story 5. But it's kind of like, it's sad that they part ways, but it's, I guess it leaves you with it's good that Woody has found his purpose and he doesn't feel like his life is going to be, like, wasted away and not being, like, it's not that Bonnie doesn't love him, but he's not her favorite toy.
Yeah, I'll still watch it, but yeah, I kind of like, it's interesting. It'll be interesting to see, because I was interested in Sparky, because I'm like, Sparks. I remember in camps used to have Sparks. And I'm a completionist. I like if there's a series, I like to finish it. So yeah, I'll still watch it, but it'll be interesting to see. Like, I was also interested to see what they did with Bo Peep's character, because they in the last film, like, they really did develop her a lot. So I'm glad that they're giving her more in this one. And maybe she might get her own, like, mini series or something.
That would be cool to see. I did really like that Bo Peep had more to do in this than any other, you know, any other of the previous movies. Granted, like, those movies were made, like, almost 20 years ago. And we know why. It's like Bo Peep was usually, like, waiting for Woody to come back. And then, like, I think that's, like, a part of her character. She's like, I got tired of waiting for people. I got tired of waiting. So I decided to just go do my own thing. And I'm like, yeah, she chose and she found her own purpose. And I think that's an important thing, where it's like you transition. It's kind of like transitioning a phase in your life where, like, I think maybe, like, people who are slightly older, you know, like, have had kids and now they're empty nesters. And that's how I looked at Woody. He's like an empty nester. He doesn't have a kid anymore, really. And he's learning how to let go of Bonnie, but also find his own identity.
Well, that's kind of, yeah, so I guess it's more, this is like, we've always said that like people always say that the Pixar films are for both adults and for children. So that's one of those things that as you get older, I guess you could relate to more.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, there's things going on. Yeah. So, yeah, I guess that's it, right? So that's the...
Yep.
So how much... So, what would you rate? What would you rate it as?
Oh, you're going to make this difficult for me.
Yes, I will.
For nostalgia, I want to say it 3. But for how much I enjoyed it, I want to say it 2. So 2. Like, I love Toy Story. I think it's just... And I love Forky. So I'm like, I love Forky saying, I'm trash. It's funny. Which, oh, by the way, if y'all are listening to this, go check out Lizzie's post on But Why Though, where she talks about how she saw imposter syndrome in Forky. I thought that was a very interesting read. Quick plug for that. But sorry, back to this. Like you said with Spider-Man, it's not that it's a bad movie. There's just things I'm like, I'm just not completely happy with. And I'm like, I'm a 27-year-old woman. I'm going to be more critical than a child is with this movie. So I understand it's a children's movie and everything. I like that it's continuing the whole, like, moving on and kids got to grow up and all in the parts of life and whatnot. So I like that about it, but I give it a 2. Like, it's not terrible. Still go watch it if you want to check it out, if you like the Pixar movies, but that's where I am with it. Yeah. But Keanu Reeves, sorry, my bad.
Oh, yes. Was it Duke's? Duke Kaboom, yes.
Canadian action figure. He's a Canada's hero. I just want to say, that's what he calls himself.
Yeah, I know.
I just want to say, Keanu Reeves bumps it to a 3. There. He saved it. Keanu is hilarious. Put Keanu in everything. Anything animated. Give his voice to all things. Because that was probably some of my favorite parts. Is just Keanu Reeves, like, his grunts for posing. Like, oh yeah. Who? Ha.
I can picture it.
And, like, if you look at the videos of him doing it behind the scenes, it is just so adorable and pure. And that man, I love that that man has been having a hell of a few years. He deserves.
He does.
So, without Keanu Reeves, this movie is a 2. With Keanu Reeves, this movie is a 3. And...
Uh-oh. So, there you go. So, you give it a solid 3.
With Keanu Reeves, yes. I give it a 3 because that was very entertaining with it all. But yeah, with that, I think that brings us to a close, except we have an announcement to make. Somebody got their badge to a certain place.
Yes, I did.
Yes, you did. Tell the people what you got.
I got my badge to San Diego Comic-Con. Hey. And it's a fancy badge. Came in a fancy box and everything. So I will be at San Diego Comic Con from the 18th to the 21st of July. Representing the podcast. And
sorry.
Representing But Why Though podcast community at San Diego Comic Con. So look up for that. I'm not sure what hashtag we're going to use yet, but we're going to announce it. And I'll be taking pictures from the convention floor. I'm going to be doing the, exhibitions on display. I'm going to be attending panels in Hall H. So I'll be sending videos and photos from there. I'll be taking pictures of the booths, the artist alley, food, sights and sounds. So look out for that. I'm gonna try to do my very best to make it fun and entertaining for everyone. So yeah, look out for my coverage at San Diego Comic Con. I'm very excited. This is my first year attending as press. I had a lot of fun last year just attending, just to like get the experience of it, and I had a lot of fun then. I'm sure we're gonna have a lot of fun now. It's gonna be more work now because I'm gonna be officially doing work, and so pray for my energy levels, people.
Yes. All the energy.
Yeah, I'm going to be like, pace myself. Pace myself is going to be the key theme for me at that event. I'm going to have to pace myself. That's but it's awesome. Gonna be, I'm sure it's gonna be a lot of fun. I'm gonna be seeing different panels, attending different interviews. And yeah, we'll see what happens, people. So keep an eye out for that. Yeah, so that means that our, I don't know, we might have to do a special recap for that. I'm not sure yet. We'll see.
Yeah.
I think that's great. It for big announcements. Do you have any big announcements?
Ooh, girl, no. My summer been dry a little bit. But I guess one thing that I'm trying to get going that I'm going to try for is the Chicago Film Festival.
Ooh, that's when something. Is that?
I am waiting for dates and confirmations. I don't know if like this is a case of terrible website design and or whatever, but like it happens typically in the fall. I just haven't found, and I guess with Chicago, it's not at one set location or one downtown area. Mm-hmm. Like there's like different theaters around Chicago. So you just buy the ticket and go to the film you want to go to. So it's kind of like, it's the same way, but it's weird because it's like you basically throughout, like, I guess over the course of 2 weeks, it's like you just got to look it up. But I don't think it's as high as demand as like when I was at South By, which I'm thankful for. So I'm just going to keep y'all updated. I'm going to hopefully apply to be pressed there. And I'm just trying to like wait and see like what's coming there that way. But that's all that I have on deck as far as like, I guess what I would consider a big announcement. So fingers crossed. With that.
Yep.
All right. And with that, thanks again, guys, for listening to another episode of So Here's What Happened. As always, you can follow us and chat with us on our Twitter at @SHWH_pod. Please come over there, chat with us about, you know, whatever you want to talk about. Keanu Reeves being great. If you find the Spider-Man movie is trash, we will start a thread where we can talk. I'm kidding.
It's not trash.
I was just poking fun. But yeah, we can just different things over there. Also, the But Why Though community is doing a giveaway in honor of the Avengers Endgame re-release, which I don't even want to unpack how they make it more money off of us, but I'm going to go see it again.
I ain't seeing it again. I don't need to see Hawkeye doing his shit again.
Oh, I've already planned. That's when I'm going to take my bathroom break. And then when they go to that Vormir or whatever, I'm going to go to the bathroom again. I don't care. I'm not watching it again. I'm just going to go to the bathroom or go get popcorn or get cheese sticks. I'm going to do that. So, yeah. But the But Why Though podcast community, if you go to the But Why Though Twitter page, you will see that we are doing our giveaway. And there is the special edition Funko Pops, a special edition poster for the re-release with the Iron Man gauntlet, with the Iron Man Infinity Gauntlet, and a few other fun things. So go ahead, check that out. You can even win a little special Cap Funko Pop so you can bring America's ass home. So, I'm on a roll today. No interest for that because me and Carolyn can't enter and win legally. So yeah. And with that, you can find me at LA_NEY_SHA. Carolyn, where can I find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Carrie, CarrieCnh12. On Twitter and Instagram. I've started uploading more on Instagram. So for SCCC, I'll definitely be doing that more. So you can check me out on Instagram. Same handle there. So I guess that's it. Everyone have... oh, my goodness. Excuse me.
You good?
Yeah.
Okay.
I hope you guys enjoy listening to us and have a great month. And we'll look out for... We'll be back again with our July coverage.
Yeah. And yay. Bye, y'all. See you.
Bye.